This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. and British militaries bombed more than a dozen sites used by Iranian-backed Houthis in Yemen in a massive retaliatory strike using warship-launched Tomahawk missiles and fighter jets. VOA's Carla Babb reports from the Pentagon.
The United States and the United Kingdom conducted strikes against targets inside Yemen in the Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen. These are in direct response to the more than two dozen attacks that we have seen the Houthis carry out, targeting ships and commercial vessels and military vessels in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden.
VOA's Jeff Selden on VOA's International Edition explains that the Houthi infrastructure in Yemen is sprawling in large part because of the range of supplies they get from Iran.
The Houthis are an Iranian-backed group, so they've been getting cruise missiles, ballistic missile technology, drone technology, and they've been using all of this to launch against ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. That includes international commercial shipping. Those ships have come under attack. And the British have said that they believe that some of the targets include British warships. The U.S. has not been willing to go that far because they say a lot of the attacks that have been launched, whether by missile or by drone, have been shot down to prevent any damage. And so, therefore, it's not always clear where the Houthis are aiming.
The Israeli military says it has found evidence that hostages were present in a tunnel in the Gaza Strip city of Khan Yunis, which has become the focus of Israel's ground offensive. The military on Wednesday showed the tunnel to journalists who were escorted into a neighborhood near the ruins of destroyed homes and streets. A corrugated tin hut covered the tunnel's entrance in a residential yard. The tunnel was hot and humid, with walls lined with concrete and electrical wires. This is VOA News. South Africa tells the top UN court that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza as a landmark case begins. VOA's Rick Pantaleo tells us more.
South Africa has formally accused Israel of committing genocide against Palestinians and asked the UN's International Court of Justice in The Hague to order a halt to Israeli military operations in Gaza. This is South African lawyer Adila Husim.
The first genocidal act committed by Israel is the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza in violation of Article 2A of the Genocide Convention. As the UN Secretary General explained, the level of Israel's killing is so extensive that nowhere is safe in Gaza.
Israel is said to often boycott international tribunals or UN investigations, saying they are unfair and biased. Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
And as VOA's Kim Lewis explains in its annual report published Thursday, New York-based Human Rights Watch said many governments were expressing selective outrage over atrocities committed in the conflict in Gaza.
The report analyzes the human rights situation in nearly 100 countries over the past 12 months, describing 2023 as a formidable year for human rights suppression and wartime atrocities. Israel says Hamas-led militants tortured and killed 1,200 people in their cross-border attack on October 7th, including dozens of women and children. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says more than 23,000 people have been killed by Israeli forces since October 7th, with an estimated 70% women and children. Kim Lewis, VOA News.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met Thursday in Egypt with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi on his last stop of the latest mission to find a path to peace for Israel and Gaza.
Blinken's trip included stops in Turkey, Jordan, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Greece, and Israel. It was his fourth such trip since the conflict began. Speaking to reporters as he prepared to board his plane to depart Cairo, Blinken said his visit established key objectives for peace in Gaza.
First, preventing the conflict from spreading. Second, getting more humanitarian assistance into people who need it. Three, increasing protection for civilians. Four, getting hostages out. And finally, continuing to support Israel in its efforts to make sure that October 7th can never happen again and so that this conflict can end.
Jeff Custer, VOA News.
In the greatest rebuke yet to Pope Francis, the Catholic bishops of Africa and Madagascar issued a unified statement refusing to follow his declaration allowing priests to offer blessings to same-sex couples. They assert that such unions are contrary to the will of God. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Friday, January 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi suspends diplomatic ties and closes its border with Rwanda.
There's a lot of transborder trade which are carried out between the two countries, so many people are not happy about the situation because it's going to be affecting them socially and economically.
Activists say 2023 was a year of atrocities and suppression of human rights, especially in the Horn of Africa. African countries are urged to pay greater attention in 2024 to migration and how it can help to generate economic gains. The people of the Comoros Islands are voting in presidential elections on Sunday.
President Azali changed the constitution. Most of the opposition, or total parties of the opposition, say that is against the constitution. So one can say that the main issue is for President Azali to be re-elected.
And the U.S. called for Iran to release a seized oil tanker and its crew. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi has suspended diplomatic ties with Rwanda, closed its border, and said it was deporting Rwandan citizens. This after accusing Kigali of supporting a rebel group that has allegedly been attacking Burundi. The Associated Press reports Burundi says the Red Tabara group staged an attack on December 22nd near the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo, killing 20 people, including women and children. President Evariste Ndayishimiye has since accused Rwanda of backing the rebels, a claim that Kigali denies. A government spokesperson statement described the reported border closure as unilateral and unfortunate, and said that it will restrict the free movement of people and goods between the two countries. The spokesperson also says it will also violate the principles of the regional cooperation and integration of the East African community. For Burundian reaction to these developments, viewers Douglas Umpuga reached journalist Moses Javier Rimana, who is based in the region.
It has been almost 2 years since the border was reopened, and these are the communities whereby they speak almost the same language. They have family members on the both sides of the border, and there's a lot of trade, transborder trade, which are carried out between the two countries. So many people are not happy about the situation because it's going to be affecting them socially and economically. For those who are trading between the border communities, you know, they're going to be well impacted negatively with the decisions and the announcement by the government. And also socially, because most of the people are like families in the border communities, so they'll be finding it very difficult to cross the border to the other end, especially to attend social activities.
How would you describe the relationship between Rwanda and Burundi at the moment? And what do you think is the cause of the friction?
Actually, the relation between Burundi and Rwanda seemed to be improving since 2020, when President Evariste Ndayishimiye took the office. They tried to mend the relation, but President Evariste Ndayishimiye, we remember that he tried to call on Kigali to actually hand over the alleged coup plotters of the 2015 who tried to oust President Pierre Nkurunziza by then, who are said to be hosted by Rwanda. According to Gitega said that there have been negotiations with Rwanda, and until to date, Rwanda has failed to hand them over to be prosecuted. So this has angered Burundi, and with the latest attack in Gatumba, which claimed more than 20 people in Burundi late last year. So it is sparked because Red Tabara claimed the attack, and Red Tabara is known to be supported by those who tried to oust President Pierre Nkurunziza in 2015. And these are the same people who Burundi is accusing Rwanda of hosting. So Burundi is saying that probably Rwanda is hosting the rebels who are attacking Burundi. So this has sparked actually the deteriorating relation between the two countries, which seemed to be improving from the last 2-3 years, and now deteriorating significantly after President Ndayishimiye late in December said that he's going to take tough measures in order to, because Rwanda had refused to hand over the alleged coup plotters.
And in the short term, is there a way to solve the misunderstandings between the two neighboring countries?
The community, East African community, has failed to address the problem with the challenges Burundi and Rwanda is facing, because Rwanda is saying it's not interfering with the Burundian insecurity. Remember that in 2015, Burundi accused Rwanda of sheltering those coup plotters, and also in return, Rwanda had accused the Burundi by then of supporting the FDLR rebels, who are accused of committing the 1994 genocide against Tutsi. So this one made the relations sour since then. But in the 2020, it seemed like it was improving. But now, and with this latest development, it's really sad that we see that it's now deteriorating. The only solution is that whether Rwanda can hand over the alleged coup plotters to Burundi.
That's journalist Moses Havia-Rimana. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Umpuga. The people of the Comoros Islands are voting this Sunday in a presidential election in which incumbent President Azali Assoumani is seeking a fourth term. Assoumani pushed through a controversial constitutional amendment in 2018 to remove consecutive term limits. According to Reuters, five opposition candidates are challenging the incumbent, while others are threatening to boycott the polls. They alleged that the Electoral Commission favors the president. Mohamed Saeed Nchagama is the CEO and chief editor of Heba FM Radio in Moroni. He tells me that President Assoumani will win mainly because of the changes in the constitution.
One obvious is President Azali going for a third mandate. You know, until his election, the constitution ensured that president would sit for 5 years and then it would go to a president from another island. President Azali changed the constitution. He was elected in 2016 and then he changed the constitution and 2018 was elected in 2019 and now saying that he can also go for two mandates. This one, the one that is from 2019, finishing now, and then a second mandate. So most of the opposition, or total parties of the opposition, say that is against the constitution. They oppose him. So one can say that the main issue is for President Azali to be re-elected. What is his issue is what kind of confidence the sense of equality shared by the different islands, you know. If President Azali is elected, the island of Anzouan, which would have been the one to choose where the president would come from, may feel rejected and maybe some kind of secessionist, you know, feelings will arise or develop.
So is everyone in the opposition participating, and what is the opposition saying?
The opposition is divided in two parts. One part of the opposition is saying there is no need to go in election where President Azali has all the cards. He will cheat, he will do whatever, and it's like in 2019. Now, some parties and main contenders, they say we have to go and fight against Azali and prevent him through elections because there is no other issue. If we say that we don't go, then that leaves him the country in any case. But until this morning, there was uncertainty because the agreement that was supposed to be reached about transparency, how opposition candidates would be represented in the electoral votes, was not respected until now. Today, those candidates, they made a sitting almost the whole day so that they could choose freely the assessors, you know, in the voting, you know, electoral on the poll stations.
What is the validity in the accusation that some of the opposition leaders are making that they will boycott because they think that the Electoral Commission is favoring the president or the ruling party? What's the truth in that allegation?
Already, the committee in the poll stations, the main officers, the three main officers, they are appointed by the authorities, the government. So the government has accepted now that the candidates appoint themselves they are representative in all the villages, and that's make it that the votes can go on.
Mohamed Chagama is the CEO and chief editor of Heba FM Radio in Moroni, the Comoros Islands. 2023 was a consequential year for human rights suppression and wartime atrocities, especially in the Horn of Africa, according to a new report by Human Rights Watch published yesterday, Thursday. The rights group blames regional blocs and the international community for not doing enough to protect civilians. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has this report.
Governments in the Horn of Africa dealt with large-scale humanitarian crises in 2023. With no checks on abuses in Sudan and Ethiopia, civilians withstood the worst of atrocities committed in the name of war, the report by Human Rights Watch says. Letitia Bader is a deputy director in the Africa division at the Rights Group.
We saw blatant flouting of very basic laws of war, human rights law by governments.
In Sudan, a war that broke out last April between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces has killed thousands and displaced millions of civilians, sparking a humanitarian crisis. The report says the warring parties repeatedly used heavy weapons in densely populated areas and that instead of treating this crisis as a priority, influential governments and regional bodies have pursued short-term gains at the expense of rights-driven solutions.
Time and again, we saw how there was limited diplomatic willingness at the regional level, but also at the international level, to really press for the sort of accountability which is needed to end these cycles of impunity.
Several countries, including the United States and Saudi Arabia, tried to broker ceasefires in Sudan but weren't successful. In Ethiopia, after parties to the conflict in the northern part of the country signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in late 2022, which Bader says resulted in improvement in the human rights and humanitarian situations in parts of Tigray, the limited international efforts to promote meaningful accountability and an end to abuses quickly dissipated, the report says.
Over the last 6 months in particular, we've seen a deteriorating rights situation and fighting in the Amhara region. Here again, we are seeing the impact on the civilian community. We've documented cases of extrajudicial killings, sexual violence, but also the devastating impact that this ongoing cycles of fighting is having on civilians' ability to access basic care.
Fighting erupted in Tigray in late 2020 after the Tigray People's Liberation Front attacked army bases across the region. The attacks initially overwhelmed the federal military, which later mounted a counteroffensive alongside Eritrean soldiers and forces from the neighboring region of Amhara. In 2021 alone, 5.1 million Ethiopians became internally displaced, a record for the most people internally displaced in any country in any single year at the time, according to the Council on Foreign Relations. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, January 12th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The African Center for Strategic Studies wants African countries to pay greater attention in 2024 to migration and how it can help to generate economic dividends. The center is an academic institution within the U.S. Department of Defense devoted to the study of security issues relating to Africa. In its latest publication, African Migration Trends to Watch in 2024, the center also says international partners can support mutually beneficial migration efforts by improving data collection on African population and migration patterns. Wendy Williams is a research associate with the Africa Center for Strategic Studies and the author of the report. She explains to me some of the main drivers behind the nearly 1 million new migrants over the past year.
For the last 20 years, we've been seeing international migration trending upward. This is driven largely by structural and governance factors, such as limited economic opportunity, state fragility, a growing youth population, and climate change. Another driver is demographics. Africa is the world's youngest region, and it continues to experience more population growth than any other part of the world. And again, estimates are that its population is going to double from 1.2 billion to 2.5 billion by mid-century. Unfortunately as well, though, Africa continues to experience state fragility in many ways. In addition to the unresolved and new conflicts on the continent, we're also seeing most recently in the last few years this continuation of coups. And as well, last year also saw lots of contested elections. So it's this state fragility and these reversions to autocratic rule that constrict basic freedoms and they heighten repression that drives up displacement and it compels people to migrate.
I wanted to ask you also, Wendy, are there benefits to migration for both the countries of destination and the countries of origin? Are there benefits?
Absolutely. Migration is necessary not just for countries of origin, where it provides a lifeline to families in fragile economies, but it's also a benefit to countries of destination. Let's not forget that migrants provide a labor source, a much-needed labor source that may be missing in these countries. And if it's done well, if it's managed well, it can be a virtuous cycle that could benefit both destination countries as well as the countries of origin.
So, Wendy, reading through your report, it seems you are saying that migration is here to stay. So what do you suggest both for the countries of destination and origin? What can they do to make this process better?
Yes, migration is here to stay. It's been around for forever. It is a normal and healthy adaptation process for people to find opportunity when they cannot find it at home. So really what would make migration safer for everybody and more beneficial for both countries of origin and destination is for governments to try to proactively support migration, to make it regular, to make it managed, to help prevent people from trying to do migration secretly. One of the first things that could happen, especially for the continent of Africa, is improving data collection on African populations and migration patterns. Better information will lead to better laws and better political environments, which are necessary to create opportunities. And by that, I mean allowing young entrepreneurs to set up businesses more easily and fairly, drawing in foreign direct investment to create more jobs and careers in these countries of origin, and creating more responsive and efficient bilateral and regional arrangements with other countries in terms of work visa schemes that benefit both countries of origin and destination, as well as protect the people involved.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you.
Wendy Williams is a research associate with the African Center for Strategic Studies. She was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. U.S. officials are calling for Iran to immediately release an oil tanker and a crew that Tehran says it has seized. Iranian officials said the country's navy has taken possession of the ship in retaliation for what Tehran said is the theft of Iranian oil from the same vessel last year. More from VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
Iran's official news agency says the St. Nicholas oil tanker was seized off the coast of Oman as a response to past American actions against Iranian oil shipments as part of U.S. sanctions on Tehran. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby told reporters on Thursday the boarding of the Marianas-flagged Greek-controlled tanker, reportedly loaded with 145,000 tons of crude oil and staffed by a mostly Philippine crew, is an illegal act, and Tehran's justification for its action has no merit.
I would put little stock in anything coming out of Tehran. This was a commercial vessel freely transiting international waters. No justification whatsoever to seize it. None whatsoever. They need to let it go.
Meanwhile, the U.S. military says Houthis in Yemen, who are supported by Iran, fired an anti-ship ballistic missile into international shipping lanes in the Gulf of Aden on Thursday. No damage or injuries are reported. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport here in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire, where it is just ours before the kickoff of the CAF Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023. The 2023 AFCON will be the 34th edition of the tournament since its founding in 1957. This is the third edition to have 24 teams participating. A total of 6 world-class stadiums spread across 5 cities will be playing host to the 34th edition of the Africa's biggest football tournament between the 13th of January to the 11th of February. For the fans, expectations are high. Kofi Yassin is an Ivorian who spent most of his growing days in Ghana.
I feel great. I feel very happy because since 1984, we've not hosted the African Cup of Nations. The last time we hosted a good competition from CAF was 2009. African Nation Championship in 2009, the first edition. So it's a very great moment that we are waiting for. The excitement is very great. You can see at the airport, the excitement is great. People are very happy to host the African Cup of Nations. In 84, we were not born. We did not know all these things. So we are really, really happy.
Coach of the Super Eagles of Nigeria told Daybreak Africa Sports shortly after the Eagles' first training in Abidjan that his side came to AFCON with one goal in mind.
Of course, it's a short tournament, it's a difficult tournament, hard tournament. Guinea Equatorial was, he did better than us. Last AFCON is a good team, but you want to win. You want to win. For that, you want to put the focus 100%, everybody, not only the training, in the meals, in the rest.
The tournament, which begins on Saturday, will see the host nation take on Guinea-Bissau in the opening game. Away from the AFCON, Uganda She Cranes head coach Fred Mugrewa was left disappointed with the poor officiating that transpired in the game against Wales. Uganda were on the losing side in the first encounter of the 3-game series after suffering a 57-45 loss to host Wales in the netball test series at the House of Sports in Cardiff. While speaking to the press, Mugrewa revealed that the poor officiating demoralized the girls who were trying to fight for their life back into the game. The two sides will be meeting again on Friday and Saturday at the same venue before they head into the Vitality Netball Nations Cup. In cycling news, Ethiopian cyclist Segabo Gebremariam Grame has announced he will call it quits from the sport after the 2024 Tour de Rwanda race slated for February 18th to the 25th. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, January 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Greetings. This is VOA Sunny Young. Brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and voaafrica.com. It's the sunny side of sports right here on The Voice.